Hi everyone, welcome to Final Score with the Score. As you've probably just heard, Chelsea 2, Burnley 2. I don't have many words for it, but that's the result. Well, Chelsea have drawn at home to a 10-man team that are 19th in the Premier League. After leading twice. Had a few chances in the first half, scored, was disallowed. Then we got a penalty, went up, one nil up. Then right at the start of the second half, we concede a goal, which, yes, it's a great strike, but we should close that down and stop it happening in the first place. Of course, it's the scorer's first ever goal in the Premier League, because Chelsea just do their normal charity thing, and then we go back in front. Great goal from Cole Palmer, who had a good game again, and then immediately go down the other end and concede one from a corner, and that's a really bad goal to concede. Sloppy again, poor organisation at the back again. So we've got a draw out of a game we should have won. We had enough chances to win because of sloppy defending, really, and bad organisation at the back. And that's on Pochettino. We had a lot of chances that we missed that we should have scored as well, and players have got to take responsibility there. But we already knew that was a problem, that finishing has been a problem this season. And we still managed to score two goals. And that should have been enough. That should have been enough against 10 men. Against 10-man Burnley. They were 10 men for a whole half. And they scored two goals with 10 men. It's just embarrassing. It's not good enough. I don't know what to say, really. in terms of what I think should happen. And, you know, we'll probably end up talking about Pochettino. We're going to talk about the game, who you thought played well. Who you thought played badly, about Pochettino. I really want to get your thoughts. This is a really important conversation we need to have, I think. So, we're going to have a few people speak up. So we've got, we've already got some people up. So, the sideline, CFC, you're up here. Give me your first thoughts on the game. You can unmute yourself. Just trying to. Okay, he's not unmuted himself. So, well, the legendary Louis is here, all the way from Italy. Chelsea has still managed to ruin his day, even though he's in lovely Italy. I'm sorry that Chelsea have ruined your day, mate. How are you feeling?
I mean, you know, I want to say it is what it is, because that's what it feels like at this point. I do think that when you see our Chelsea have opportunities to seize, and obviously Newcastle managed to get a win earlier in the day, but, you know, they were looking like a bit shaky. If I was looking at that as a Chelsea player, or as Chelsea in general, I'd be going, right, let's pick up these points. 19th place, they're not all that. We should get this result quite easily. And then we're also given an extra helping hand with a red card for the manager and a red card for one of them. Questionable whether it is or not. No, obviously, because that was a big conversation earlier. Don't care, we were given the opportunity and we failed to capitalise on it yet again. There's all this chat about data, obviously, over the past few days. Data's important, but it doesn't always win you games. When it comes to the eye tests, there is a lot left to be desired, and it's something which needs to be rectified very, very quickly. Sitting here and saying, you know, we'll get the next one, it'll come, it'll change. There needs to be some instant impacts right now. I'm all for this project. I'm all for seeing these players develop. It's what they've gone with. But there needs to be an instant impact. There needs to be some things changed quickly. But we say this most weeks now. You know, it's a case of we're sat in 11th, and when Pochettino said, oh, well, you know, the data says we should be fourth. But we're not Poch because of certain things that happen in games. Team talks, I want to know what goes on in the dressing room at half time, because every single time we start a second half, we just don't look at the races at all. I don't know what it is.
Yeah, I mean, every time we start a half, I think, you know, I mean, we didn't, the first 10 minutes of the game, we didn't really wake up. You know, we weren't all at it. And we grew into the game, and then we ultimately deserved to take the lead in the first half. But yeah, it's every half as well. Like, it's just ridiculous. Like, I actually was quite positive before today. I thought I will win this comfortably, no problem. Like, you know, we're at home, got a good record at home recently. You know, we haven't lost many recently. We're scoring goals. It's Burnley, you know, and we should have won. We should have won. But we keep making these stupid mistakes at the back and conceding goals that we should not be conceding. And, you know, our attack has improved a lot this season, but our defence has gone to pot. It's just absolutely awful. And I don't think it's the players. I really don't think it's the players. I just don't think we're well set up defensively. Like, defensively, you know, like, and yeah.
It does come down to a lack of experience, though, as well. I think it does come down to personnel. Well, you know, Axel De Zassi is 25. People will still talk he's like a young player. You know, he's the personnel. You know, he's not a young lad. He's captain Monaco. You know, he knows what it means to be at the sharp end of the stick, whether that be in France or whether it's been playing, you know, in the Europa League with Monaco or whatever. And you know, he's not really leading as much as I think I'd like to, or some people would. It really, for me, does come down to, again, just, I mean, we've been saying it for 18 months, just a couple of bits of quality that are older heads.
That's
all this team needs.
Yeah.
We just need someone who can help them.
Yeah.
Because right now, they're kids learning from kids. It's not going to get any better.
Yeah, we've been saying this, haven't we? I mean, you and me have been talking about this for, seems like forever, about, you know, it's just obvious. And it wouldn't only, we're just talking about a couple of players. It doesn't need to be the whole team. It just needs to be a couple of players. Like, you know, like a proven finisher up front who just, you know, is going to score goals. You know, right? They don't need to adapt. They don't need to develop. They're just going to come in and they're going to score goals. And a defender who, again, just can come in and, you know, defend in the Premier League, organise a defence, lead a defence, like, be vocal. And has enough quality to perform at the top of the top end of the Premier League.
It's like there's one example I saw yesterday with Man United, and they were moaning about it because of his age, right? They've also been like, this is an example for us. I'm not saying it's going to happen. But that's all this is, right? They were linked with Joshua Kimmich, right?
Yeah.
And you look at that, it's okay. Well, yes, he's 29, granted, but that's what this team needs. He's 29. He's done it at one of the best clubs in the world. He's a very capable player who can play multiple positions. He can play defensive midfield. He can play right back if he needs someone to fill in. You know, it's something where you just have someone in that team, in that spine, who can pick people up by the bootstraps and go, right, this is how we're going to do things differently. This is how things need to operate. Again, again, that's just an example. I'm not saying it's going to happen. I doubt it would. It definitely isn't going to happen, let's be brutally honest. But, you know, that's all I mean when I say that. I look at it and I go, you just need someone like that, or even someone Premier League proven. Looking down the table, you know, are there any centre backs we're going to pick up who could maybe come into the squad and just be there? You know, if two or 3 years ago, I might have said, you know, Connor Cody, just someone who's, you know, an older head who can hold this team and help those younger players come along and still be there knocking about longer than Thiago Silva. You know, again, just examples. There are obviously better ones out there. I'm just thinking, you know, top of my head right now. But, you know, it's a case that it just needs some players who've been there, done it, who can be here for 3-4 years whilst these guys mature to allow for that next set to come.
It's so obvious, isn't it? I mean, this is just how football teams are built. You know, you have a few experienced heads, you know, through the core of the squad, and then you build young players around that. And then eventually those players obviously leave and retire and, you know, whatever. And then you have your young team, you know, and they become the experienced players. That's how football works. Like, this is just known in football. I don't understand why, you know, why our sporting directors are so, like, every player has to be a young player. Like, they don't. And it's like, we're not even saying that, like, every player has to be an old player. Just a couple, two or three players in the entire squad like, and good experience, not Raheem Sterling, like, experience. Because, like, you know, came on again and missed a sitter, right? You need someone. If you're going to have someone with experience, they've got to be able to deliver immediately. Like, they come in and you know they score that, right?
When Raheem Sterling's a good player where you'd I think he's that backup dancer experience. He's that player who you, I think comes in and you know, he's been there and done it, but he's not the main man. He doesn't have the quality to be the main man.
Exactly.
It needs to be somebody who can come in, like you said, and deliver straight away. You know, that's why, I mean, Ivan Toney was something you and I were discussing, but then, I mean, he's got a touch of the Lukaku's about him.
I think there's a few mentality reasons why clubs aren't going for him.
Yeah, but I think, look, overall, there's definitely things that could be analysed. There's things to be improved, but it's the fact, it's the basics, which is being massively overlooked, is something which I look at and I go, what are these guys doing? I think it's a case, like we were talking about on the preview pod, about the supporters' trust statement, you know, where they said that they feel there's a disconnect, where they feel there's not a lot going on. Again, you and I have said this multiple times. Sometimes you just need to have a clear understanding of where things are going. If someone could tell us, right, there's a reason we're doing it this way, this is why this is happening.
Yeah.
It's not great, we know that, but trust us, stick with it. I'd be far more obligated to do so because I'd know what's going on.
Yeah, that's what I get to talk to people on the board, and I've told them this, and I know that there's people on the board who actually are in favour of doing something like that, but the ownership aren't doing it. I think if they just came out and explained what their plan was and what they wanted to do and what they wanted to achieve and how they wanted to achieve it, you know, you don't have to go into intricate detail, but just lay out the vision, right? And just say and say, we know this is difficult right now. We know this isn't where we want to be, but this is where we want to get to. I think some fans will be more patient, but we don't get anything. We don't get any communication. We don't get any, you know, we don't get any direct communication from the ownership. You know, I thought they were going to do that when they took over. I thought that was something they were planning on doing, but it's not happened yet. I mean, it's probably not a good time to do it right now. The best time to do it is probably at the end of the season, but they do need to do it, and they need to do it soon, because fans are getting restless, and you know, fans are getting frustrated, and fans are bored of the same stuff coming out of the club, and the same stuff, and the same briefings and all of that. They're bored of it. They want to hear from the owners directly, and some accountability and some vision, some, like, you know, we want to know. We're not going to bite their heads. We're not going to bite their heads off if they come out and say stuff. You know, it's they need, and it's not just to supporters groups either, but to the overall fan base.
Well, I think if you said it to the supporters trust, and I think this is where I think we, you know, people could get educated on it as well, which I think is important, and I think everyone can help with that education. I think it's worth saying that, you know, with the Chelsea Supporters Trust, that, you know, it's always worth getting involved. It's always worth following their tweets and hear what they're saying, because they are our voice. You know, it's they're the ones that are there to help us. And obviously, you know, I appreciate. I mean, Score, you said to me the other day about the FAB. You know, that they are doing a decent job, but it's a new model again. It's something else, brand new, all sparkly and shiny, and it's kind of a case of where, you know, There is a lot with that needs to be analysed, and there is a lot with that, you know, it's not ready. You use the traditional forums, use the people that are there, use the people that can help that transitional period. But then it just comes down to it where people aren't doing that. They're not using that. They're going, that has to be all brand new, has to be done our way, has to be done like this. It's like, that does not work. That doesn't work.
It, doesn't.
It needs to be a case of, you know, there needs to be appreciation. There needs to be a transfer period where, again, if they communicate with us what's going on, they use the traditional forums help that transition happen, everyone works together, No, I guess that, let's be honest, this is where it'd get political, because it'd be a case of where are the, you know, fans forums going to want to have relinquish those conversations, or is there going to be a way where they can work around it? But they, those voices that are there, that are traditional, that have a presence, they could be using. But instead, they're going, nope, we're going to pick one person, representation, elected by X, Y, and Z. I'm not going to lie, I when I read that statement from the FAB about these supporters have been elected to be part of this board, right? I didn't even realise, right? Didn't even realise that vote had happened. I haven't got an email. I'm a paying member of Chelsea. I didn't see it. That wasn't very well organised. You know, it's a case of where people. If you've got those social forums where it can push people in the right direction, people can have those conversations, use them. Don't be all like brand new and everything needs to be shiny about it. Sometimes being traditional helps in situations.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, I'm a member of the Chelsea Sports Trust. They've got an emergency meeting, I think, arranged for this evening on Zoom. And it was arranged before the games. It wasn't. It's not a reaction to the game. I know they do a lot of good work, and you know they're real fans who care about the club. And they're elected by fans. The people who, in charge of that, are elected by fans, and they're elected to represent fans. And fans present their views to them, and they report back, and that's all they've done. But yeah, I mean, I don't like the politics of fan groups, really. But yeah, you're right. Use them. Absolutely, use them. Like, you know, present the vision to them. Like, you know, have a meeting with the hold a meeting with the supporters trust and members and stuff, where you present that vision, and then, you know, at least then you've got some members who actually understand what we're trying to do and why. Because I do believe that the club want to win and they want to have success. I don't doubt that, but you know, I get to talk to people who know. And I know that I'm quite privileged in that position, and nobody else, not many people get to hear that. And if everyone else heard what I heard, there wouldn't be this kind of disconnect and anxiety and stress in the fan base. But I totally get why fans are frustrated. Like, it's, you know, I mean, it's just not, you know, just drawing with Burnley at home when they have 10 men and they're 19th in the Premier League, you know, it's, they've lost 20 times this season. We beat them. We beat them at their own ground earlier in the season, 4-1. It's just not good enough. And, you know, I just felt so apathetic today. You know, I felt for the first time, I can't be bothered with going through this every week now. It's just, you know, we've got to be better than that. So we've got Cam up here, and he's one of our team, and he's always got great things to say. So, Cam, what are your thoughts on the game and on Chelsea generally?
Score, man. I've seen that one too many times this season. I always watch the match, but right before I turn on my question, it's like, am I going to watch a match that I've seen, you know, three or four or five or six times this season already? And the answer is almost always yes, which is great because it means I'm at least right. But it was a tough one to digest, I guess, because in the first half we honestly, I thought we played, you know, we played some pretty nice football. We obviously were still giving away too many chances in transition. Our spacing and our just positioning is so obviously terrible, and I guess on set pieces too, as we've seen. But you know, offensively, I thought we had some really nice football. We actually were kind of getting through the middle of them a bit, which I liked. And yeah, it was promising. But I mean, I was watching on a stream, so I was a bit delayed for Burnley's second goal. I had literally just been celebrating Cole Palmer's second, and then I pulled up Forza to check this or to see the score. And check a stat, and then it turned 2-2, and I couldn't even believe it. And sure enough, the goal showed up on my screen a minute later. So it was a tough one. You know, I think realistically, I just have desensitized myself, as Louis and I have said many times this season. You know, to these kinds of things. It's that, or it's the opposite, right? Where you get on Twitter and you just rant and rave, and that's what I'm here to do with you guys today. So that's my take on it. I really just wanted to back up what Louis said too about the supporters' trust and everything as well. But I'll let you guys get deeper into that.
Yeah, thanks, Cam. I think what you said is what a lot of us feel. It's that we've seen this before, and we're getting tired of it. And I think fans are. I just like I'm seeing like the most calm, rational, intelligent, sensible fans, patient fans, getting really emotional and frustrated, you know, and that, and when that's happening, then you know something's not right, you know, and I'm a patient fan myself. I don't like to, you know, start going for the manager or going for players or anything like that. I don't like doing that. At the same time,
there's some things that Pochettino said over the season where he doesn't help himself.
Yeah,
where people just say he was talking about, he was laughing at when Chelsea fans saying you don't know what you're doing. What gives you that sense of entitlement? We're talking about one of the big things which he needs to do for his end of season review, and this has been very publicly talked about, is the fact that the results need to improve, the players need to improve, and need to build a relationship with the fans. Instead of building a relationship with the fans, he goes, oh, you know, we're relaxed. It is what it is. You know, we're working on a project. It's going well. We'll win them over. I'm like, yeah, but you're talking to us like we're idiots. Like, look, me and my dad made a joke, right? We were sat there in the piazza having a coffee, all right, looking at the game as it went on. I'm going to tell you what, we could play this poorly for the next 2.5 years. Spurs still won't win anything. And he's coming in with this very Spursy mentality. As I'm being honest, as is this board. The way that they're operating is very much like, well, there's the data works, because obviously data was their thing, right? And I appreciate that he did need an upgrade at Chelsea in terms of, you know, data
absolutely
analysis.
Is, yeah.
But now that's used as a crutch. And that was used.
Well, Potts has used it as a crutch. Yes, I agree.
It needs to change, and the mentality needs to change. So, you know, really, I get we're not the Chelsea of old, right? I get we're not that. I get it's a whole new structure that's being put in. And, you know, that's something we have to accept. It's a new group of people. It's a new business. It's what it is. That happens in any business, in any line of work, right? However, having said that, my word, like, I still appreciate what's been before. I appreciate the structures. Appreciate all of that sort of stuff. Appreciate the culture. No, they don't seem to do that. It's very much a case of, this is what it was, this is what we are now, there's no transition period in between, deal with it. It doesn't work.
Well, this is the transition period, isn't it? I mean, I get what you mean. I think the ownership want to win a different way. You know, they want to do it in a more sustainable way, which I understand. But, again, they're not communicating that to the fans. And so the fans can then go and make up their own minds on whatever it is and make their own interpretations, and you can't blame fans for doing that because they're not getting any communication from the ownership. So fans are just free to make up whatever they think, whatever their conclusions are, because they're not getting them countered by the ownership. Like, and so, yeah, that's why I understand fans' frustration, because we're not hearing anything about what do you want to do? What do you want to achieve? Not through some newspaper, not through some report. What do you want to achieve? Like, tell us. Like, why are you so scared to talk to us? Like, just one interview. Like, it doesn't have to be like, you don't have to do it every week. Like, just one interview would change everything. You know, and I still don't get why they're unwilling to do it, because it makes no sense to me. Like, you know, and oh dear. You know, that's a big sigh right there. So we've got Frank up here. I've just seen a stat. Chelsea have now conceded 47 goals in the Premier League this season, equaling the amount they conceded in the whole of last season. Now we've scored more goals than last season now, but we've conceded more as well. So we fixed one problem, which is scoring goals to a certain extent, because we still can't take chances enough. we're still not clinical enough. We could have scored more goals than we actually have if we'd had a striker, you know. And Pochettino asked for an experienced striker in the summer and in January and didn't get one. But we're conceding more goals, and that is down to the manager. You know, with that is down to the manager. Like, the tactical setup of our defence is just not right. You know, and probably the midfield in front of it as well. That's coaching. That is, you know, you can't organise a defence properly. I mean, you know, it's not good enough. And that's a huge problem. That's a problem that Chelsea have had for years, is we've either been really good at defending and can't score, or we've scored loads of goals and conceded loads of goals. Like Lampard, we scored a lot of goals, but we conceded a lot of goals. Tuchel, we didn't score quite as many goals, but we kept a lot of clean sheets. And it's gone. And with Potter, we didn't score that many goals, and we, you know, our defence was a lot better than it was this season, that's for sure. But now we've gone back again to be able to score goals and create chances, but can't keep clean sheets. I don't even remember when we last kept a clean sheet. I'm sure we did keep ones at some point recently, but I can't remember.
I'll find out for you.
Yeah, I mean, what a stat that is, you know.
Let's get some people in now, man. While I look for that stat, let's get some people in here. Let's have a chat with some others.
Yeah, we've got Frank up here. I'd love to hear your thoughts, Frank.
Hey, gentlemen. I hope you guys are all doing good. Been listening to you guys. Can't agree more on all the points you guys made. You know, it's really embarrassing when a 10-man team that's most likely is going to be playing in the championship next season and is going on the front foot trying to win the game at the end of the game. It's really embarrassing, I mean, especially when you're playing at home, you know. At the end, Burnley was really going for it because they sensed the weakness of Chelsea. They sensed that, hey, they're inexperienced. Whoever that, you know, assistant manager they had, they're like, hey, push them, go for it. And they almost got it, right? If not that, you know, was what they hit, did it hit the post at the end or something? So that was embarrassing for Chelsea. And with all the things you guys talked about, I will go back to the one man, which is Pochettino, right? And the score knows from my comments on Twitter and stuff, I don't go harsh on him. I just don't call him all the time. Don't call him out all the time, especially on like stupid things they try to blame on him. I understand it's a transitioning period. I understand it's a young squad. I understand the inexperience. But when you're one up at halftime against a 10-man team, and it doesn't matter what position that team is, but let alone that team is 19th position in the Premier League, struggling all season, and come out at the second half and just different team. And we've seen this a lot this year. It's becoming like a theme from Pochettino's team is like, they come out the second half and it's like, where is that team going? What happened? And that's on him. That's on him not killing the game. That's on him not pushing his players and telling them like, hey, look, they are there for the taking. Go score 3, 4, 5 goals. Go enjoy the game. Go do that. But again, Chelsea comes out in the second half and the back foot, giving a chance, and then boom, they score a nice goal in their first goal. And that's been the problem for Pochettino is, yeah, the player will love him. Everyone will love him. He's a nice guy. But at the end of the day, when it comes to like killing games, when it comes to like, you didn't even like have to be like tactically genius at this game. You just go kill them, man. And that's what he fails. That's what he failed at, you know, Tottenham. That's what he failed in PSG. And that's why he's failing at Chelsea so far. So yeah, I will blame Pochettino on this game, obviously. Yeah, of course, there are some players that need to take their chances. You know, Jackson, I believe he missed like two good chances, you know. At the end there, Sterling just, you know, I don't know how he can score that perfect pass from Palmer, by the way. But games like this is so frustrating because there's been some positives, right? Like Mudryk has been a positive so far recently, because if you watch this game and look at Mudryk, it's like, oh my God, this looks like it's like a new player, because the way he's moving, the way he's taking on players, not afraid. Yeah, obviously he needs more improvement on his shooting, but he was a different player. But after a game like this, it's really hard to sit down and analyze the positives. It's just, I'm not sure what to, I mean, I know some people are fantasizing about making it to Europe via Premier League recently. I think after this game, I think it's impossible to make it to Europe after this game. It's just from the Premier League. I think the only hope would be FA Cup, and that's going to be really tough since we have City, but everything can happen. But I think making it to Europe And I think it's ridiculous because I believe that this squad, even with the inexperience, they should be sixth or seventh right now. And, you know, it doesn't help Pochettino. And I think Louis touched on this when he said that his messaging to the fans is always like he's trying to mock on us, you know. It doesn't help him when he comes out yesterday and he says, you know, we should have been fourth. We're like, well, we should have won this game by 5 goals, apparently, you know. So he needs to, you know, to if he wants to build a relationship with fans like he's trying, he's saying, he needs to chill and then, you know what, just win games. That's all I care about. If you win me games, I will love you. If you keep dropping points against easier opponents with some bizarre decisions, and then you come out to the press conference and then you try to mock, you know, journalists or us, that's not going to help your case. I'm not sure what's going to happen at the end of the season. I believe the new owners will keep him at the end of until at the end of the season. But I think he should leave, you know. I think the best scenario would be him resigning, knowing that he will never get, you know, the Chelsea support that he's seeking, especially from the fans. I think the best scenario would be him resigning. But at the end of the season, he needs to go. This squad needs a better manager to manage them because there is a lot of potential there. Thank you, guys.
Thank you, Frank. Lots of good points there. I got to say, I think eighth place could still get Europe. Let's be clear about it. Like if Man United get to the cup final, then eighth place is going to get Europe because whether we get to the final or not, because Man United will qualify for Europe in the league. And if they get to the cup final and we're in the cup final, then if we beat them, we get into Europe. And if we lose, then their European place will drop down to the league. And of course, we know that the League Cup European spot has already dropped down to the league. So, and we could get five Champions League places. So if those things all happen, eighth place could be Europe. And I still think we can get eighth place. Like we should be getting seventh place, sixth or seventh place. Like you're right. You're right. The last speaker was right that, you know, we should be getting sixth or seventh place with this squad, and we're not, and that's not good enough.
I think the whole situation is.
I don't think we should be giving up on Europe just yet. I mean, we've not actually lost. We've not actually lost in the league for five games. The only problem is that four of those are draws, and that's not good enough.
This is it.
I mean, look, if we can talk about stats and data all we want. I mean, look, I found that the number for you. Last time Chelsea kept a clean sheet in the Premier League was the 13th of January against Fulham, where we beat them 1-0. That's the last clean sheet we kept in the Premier League. After that, it was when we... I say after that. Just before that, it was against Preston. That's the last two times we kept a clean sheet in the Premier League. Or clean in football, sorry. When we've played a game. So, you know, I think we could talk all we want about, you know, we should be getting sixth or seventh, looking at that, et cetera, et cetera. Before today, I was looking, going, right, 3 points. It has to be 3 points. And then from there, that's when you can look up and go, fantastic. We're actually in the driving seat now. But with that, our two games in hand against opposition are against Tottenham and they're against Arsenal. Two games which you may as well consider a write-off, if I'm being brutally honest. And with that being said as well, you're going to look at other fixtures and then look at other results and look at previous seasons and do the numbers. You're looking at about probably 60, 65 tops. 65 if we're going to be, you know, optimistic.
60 points gets you eight, maybe seventh at a push. I don't think we're going to become...
We're
going to
get much more than that. I think 60 points is nice. That's what I'm looking at there. Right now we're on 40. So I'm asking us to pick up an additional 20 points. So let's call it 21. Let's be round about it and say, I'm asking Chelsea to get 7 wins, right, from the last 10 games.
Are Chelsea going to get 7 wins
in the last 10 games? I don't know.
I don't think we're going to lose many games. I think we'll lose to Arsenal.
Losing the game.
I think we'll lose one more, at least one
don't
more.
Win them.
The draws
don't mean anything, man. They don't mean anything. This one, I mean, we've drawn against Burnley.
I'm not getting into the assuming the worst. Yeah, I can't give up on. I can't get into that yet. But Yeah, I know. I understand people's frustration. I do. I understand why people are assuming the worst, and I don't like doing that myself. But I understand why people are doing it because they're just frustrated. And this, you know, we've got to start winning football matches, and we've got to stop conceding so many goals. And it's not even we're not even conceding goals to good patterns of play. We're conceding stupid goals because we lose concentration. You know, every time it's never we never they never. When was the last time a team actually earned a goal against us? Like, I can't even remember. Like, today, both goals should have been, shouldn't have been scored. I can't, what was the last game? I can't remember. I don't know. But, oh, yes, Leicester. We gifted them about two goals. I mean, you know, it's just nonsense. We shouldn't be doing this. Anyway, we've got other people up to speak. So, okay, now, the sideline. I know you're here. So
sidelines. That's one of ours. That's just there to help us chat and brings people.
Yeah.
By the way, speaking of the sidelines,
right. Okay. I've been given the mic.
Okay, Obi. Yeah.
Yeah. Hi, everyone. I have to say, really good points by Frank and the previous speaker before Frank, but I think we are falling into the trap of accepting mediocrity as Chelsea fans. If you search my Twitter handle with the word Pochettino, I have been talking about how terrible this man is as a coach for a long time. I also said it even when he went to PSG. This guy is not Chelsea standard. He does not have a winning mentality. He made Messi look like trash. I promise you, we get a coach with a winning mentality, with drive, Mourinho, Tuchel, Zidane, whoever, and swap them with Pochettino, and this same team will be challenging for the top four. I guarantee it. The problem is not with the boys. The coach is clueless. He is absolute. These boys go to their national teams or under-21s, and they play really well for teams they do not train with and have no consistency with. The problem is Pochettino. He is a mid-table coach at best. So I think we need to stop falling for the, we didn't lose. No. Again, go through my tweets, search with his name. I've been talking about this. I made a specific tweet, I think in April of last year, where I said he does not have a winning mentality. This was even before he was hired. So we need to not fall into that trap of accepting mediocrity. And it's also not a thing. Somebody was talking previously about the owners not communicating with the fans. Look, it's not about that. How many times did Abramovich speak with us? The problem is a winning mentality.
Hang on, Obi. No. The communication was still there, even if it wasn't Ryan Abramovich. He still had clear communication, maybe not with us, but within the structure. Communication with us right now is a big thing, which they built their whole bid on. Their bid was built on the communication with the fans, having conversations with the fans. I appreciate what you're saying about having a winning mentality, but just having a winning mentality isn't enough. You need to having that winning mentality throughout and having that structure and having a culture. There's so many moving parts as to why it may not be working. If the answer to I get what you're saying about Pochettino, right? But if this, it's a case of it's stuff we've heard over and over and over and over. If you were in the position right now, right, what would you do differently? Because
it's all well and good saying
the manager's have a winning mentality, get rid of him. Okay, but what's
the steps after that?
It's not accepting mediocrity. It's wanting to know the direction and wanting to understand the structure and how everything operates.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's where a lot of people are saying and where they're at. So, I mean, in terms of that, Obi, what are the steps you take?
So, to understand you clearly, are you talking about the ownership and the management taking steps to communicate with fans? How does that improve performances on the pitch? How does that make players win? I'm sorry. Look, I've been supporting this club for a very long time, right? But at the end of the day, what fans want is to win. Chelsea's football identity all over the world is winning. I say this with utmost respect. A lot of clubs do not communicate constantly with their ownership. What matters is the players need to win, and coaches need to respect the fans. Coaches need to respect the legacy of the club. Pochettino clearly does not. clearly, because this man comes on.
Obi, to use your own logic against you, you've just said what does the things off the pitch have with an effect on the pitch? What would Pochettino have in respect for the fans have an effect with on the pitch? Because I think we're both coming to the same answer.
No.
So if you're saying that not communicating with the fans isn't as important as it should be, right? But then saying that Pochettino should respect the legacy, respect the culture, respect the fans. If that's the case, that they marry up.
No. So first of all, if you would let me finish and not interrupt me, then I would get my point across. Now, the point I was trying to make as regards Pochettino not respecting the fans is him going on press conferences and telling us that Chelsea is a different club from what it was before and we should not expect to win. He said that at least twice now. And I think it's absolutely ridiculous. With the amount of talent he has at his disposal, he's not ruthless enough when he needs to be, allowing players who are not necessarily performing well to continue to stay on the pitch when they shouldn't, giving the wrong people opportunities. It has cost us the points already this season, taking off players when they are, you know, on a patch of good form, you know, not allowing consistency within the team. He doesn't have to necessarily speak. It's the disregard. You can't tell fans that this is a new club, it's a new ownership, so we should be fine with it. It's unacceptable. Our mentality, for so many of us who've been fans for 5, 10, 20 years now, is winning. That's all we know. Now, it's a new team. Yes, they need time to gel, but the performances cannot be this abysmal. And the truth is, whatever leadership you have, I work in engineering, whatever leadership you have, whoever is your corporate leader, and whether it's in the corporate sector, even NGOs, the mentality of the leader flows down. It cascades down all the way to the cleaner in the organization. If everyone is on their toes, if they can see that the boss is on his toes at every point in time, I promise you, even the person that mows the lawn at Chelsea will be on his toes. And that is what we had before. Now, there's something that I know some people might not like Mourinho anymore, but I need to tell you guys something. The man has a lot of seriousness behind him. People like him, people like Tuchel, they have so much seriousness and passion behind them, and it forces everyone around them to sit up. That's why I'm saying, This you know, clown, with all due respect, is not fit for Chelsea. I said it even before he was hired, you know, and I think the ownership needs to hold on, sorry, please let me just
I will interrupt you if you're gonna be look, we're not here to call people clowns, say things like that. That's not how we do things here. All right. So if you wanna maintain the level of things, and by the way, I have a bit of decorum when you talk about it, rather than just saying, don't interrupt me when someone's trying to ask you a question and have a conversation, we can carry on. Either that, we can end it there and we'll get someone else in. That's not how we do things here. Just thought I'd let you know that, okay? So let's have a bit of decorum about how we chat, please.
Okay, no problem. Awesome. Sorry about that. But, you know, I also think that, yes, the ownership, they came in, they said a lot of things about speaking with the supporters. I've been a member of the supporters' trust for years. You know, I've received badges even when I wasn't in the United Kingdom, you know. But the fans, I know there's a meeting by 6:30 today, and I'm supposed to be in that meeting as well as so many of you here. But the owners need to also understand the legacy. And Supporters Trust, thank God for them and the work they are doing, communicate to the owners that, look, this is who we are. We are a winning club. And they need to really take us by the scruff of our neck. But the truth is, if the person in charge of the squad, in charge of the players, doesn't have that in his DNA, if it is not showing, even the ownership will not realize that they need to sit up, that they need to do more. Because the attitude of the person in charge of the team that engages in day-to-day or weekly activities that bring success to the club, if the person in charge of that team isn't strong or striving for greatness every time, if he doesn't have that hunger, desire and passion, if he's not asking the fans, I mean, go back and check comments by Mourinho and Tuchel, for example, and even Conte, maybe they've talked about different times about fans needing to support more. And we've talked about having that problem at Stamford Bridge sometimes, where fans are too involved in the games and forgets to, you know, you know, cheer up the boys, even when maybe they're losing or, you know, drawing a game. But you see it when the coaches are also motivating the fans and riling up the crowd to support the boys. We don't see anything from Poch. I say this with all respect. I know maybe some of you might be sympathetic to him, but look, this guy is a mid-table, bottom barrel level, and he needs to be removed at all costs, unless we are just going to keep accepting nonsense, mediocrity, and pain. So many people are emotionally disconnected right now. Some people don't watch games. We watch games, we already know we are going to lose. It's affecting our key players. I mean, we've started hearing things about Cole Palmer learning Spanish and stuff about him maybe living in a season or two because he can't deal with it. I mean, I don't blame him.
I mean, we don't know. I'm not saying any of that. We'll have to see. But mate, I appreciate you coming on.
Yeah, sure.
We're going to talk about Cole Palmer later on. Take care. Cheers, mate. Thank you. Cheers.
Yeah, great conversation there. I think what's clear is a lot of fans have a lot of passion, a lot of emotion, and that comes from care for the club and love for the club. However we interpret it, sometimes people get carried away, a little bit. But yeah, I mean, we're all frustrated. We all want to be better. We all want Chelsea to be winning games. We all want Chelsea to be competing back near the top, where we all want Chelsea to be, where we kind of expect Chelsea to be, because that's what we used to. And we're not at the moment. And we're not hearing anything as to, you know, the future, and fans are concerned. And that is totally understandable. So I do appreciate fans being concerned, and everyone has their own perspective, and that's important to acknowledge. But I want to get to Cam. Cam, let us know about the show on Monday.
Well, you guys were talking about it earlier with Louis and how important the supporters' trust is and has been, and kind of the need for us to find some solutions, not just on the pitch, but off of it as a fan base as well. I think there's a larger culture war going on here in football that we're seeing with you know, different pieces like Jonathan Liu writing in The Guardian last week about kind of the football culture war between having legacy fans, you know, pinned against kind of what they call the plastic tourist international fans. And, you know, it's just, it's a tough moment in general to even be on football Twitter, let alone Chelsea Twitter. So I think, you know, what Louis said earlier is so important, and the supporters' trust has led the way, whether you've known it or paid attention or not, for a long time on a lot of these things to help fans, you know, not only have a voice, but, you know, things like the ticket compensation scheme they set up with Sheffield United in the Premier League to compensate fans who got screwed over by the TV changes, you know, happening twice. So we really need to throw our weight behind them. I think, you know, there's also something to say about just Chelsea fans and supporters around the world in general starting to kind of play their part a little bit, all of us, to just kind of think, you know, obviously we want to rant and rave about Poch or Todd Boehly or, you know, specific players. But the reality is like, we all support Chelsea, yeah, because we love the club and we've won a lot of beautiful things. But we're here more for the community aspect about all of this. That's why all of you are in this space right now. That's why we're all here. And so, you know, what can we do? How can we play our little part? And all, you know, have some constructive ideas, just like Louis was just saying to Obi there. You know, it's all good to have say your piece and what you feel, but what constructive things can we do off the pitch as fans to kind of support them? Because just nagging and complaining all the time is not going to get it done. So, you know, that's my feeling. And I know all of us here at the Echo, all of us here at the Chelsea Sideline Club, if you guys haven't you know, checked out what the Chelsea Sideline Club is, you know, they're here in the chat. Go check out the profile. A lot of things coming, big things, and we're kicking that off on Monday with a, you know, the first Chelsea town hall to really give fans a voice to speak on behalf of, you know, the Echo and Chelsea Sideline Club, and let us know what they're feeling, what's really, you know, what are some things that we can really do as a club to pull forward here in these tough times. We're going to be bringing on the supporters' trust. We've got two people from the Supporters Trust joining us. We've got Nizar Kinsella from the Evening Standard joining us. Louis will be there co-hosting along with Carrie Levy. If you've listened to the Blueprint, amazing Chelsea podcast about our history in the last 20 years, Carrie Levy is the narrator of that. And yeah, Score, I think you'll be joining us. I'll be there on the panel.
I will be there, yes.
Yeah, guys, everybody, really, I highly recommend. This is kind of the first of its kind thing. A lot of people have been asking the club to do this kind of town hall, so we took it upon ourselves. We've got some big names coming in to talk about it. And, you know, we're gonna give everybody a chance to really voice their feelings. So I hope you guys will join us. Follow the Chelsea Sideline Club now. Check that out Monday night, 7:30 GMT. So give us a follow, and we hope to have you there to hear your thoughts and listen in on the state of the club.
Cam has massively underplayed that, by the way, where he talks about all these amazing people coming in, and obviously, you know, myself included.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely, the absolute legend that is Louis Benefitti is going to be there. Yes, absolutely. And if I'm there, I want to...
Hang on, school.
Just because I got a phone call from a Burnley fan just as I was midway through making a point about how amazing Cam is. He's worked so hard over the past few months to do that and get all of this stuff sorted. And they would really, really appreciate all you guys, you know, just to come and listen and get involved. And, you know, Cam has been a big part of the Chelsea Echo and a big part of everything that Chelsea Sideline's building as well. So I would like to say, whilst you're here, as well as, you know, following everyone who's been on the panel, everyone who's spoken, and most importantly, following the Chelsea Sideline, do follow Cam as well, because he's
someone who puts in a lot of work behind the scenes and deserves more credit than we can ever give him. I just want to say that.
Cheers, Lou. I appreciate you, bud. Yeah, he's out there in Italy with the sun, just lighting him up, making him feel good, giving me all the compliments. I appreciate you.
Yeah, you don't get used to it, mate.
No, yeah. But not when you get back to London with that weather. But yeah, he's right. And honestly, guys, just, you know, you're going to hear a lot more about the Chelsea Sideline Club in the coming months. You're going to see that logo. It's going to be a big feature of a lot of the things that we're doing here at the Echo. So, by all means, just give it a follow. It's definitely something that you're going to be hearing about sooner or later. So thanks again, boys.
Awesome, man. Well,
that's fantastic. That's really great. I'm really excited about, that on Saturday. On Monday, it's going to be really, really great. I think it's the sort of thing that's needed. If we could get someone like Daniel Finkelstein onto one of those one day, it'd be great, wouldn't it? It's on the Chelsea board.
That's the goal.
He's a proper Chelsea fan. I've had a lot of interaction with him. He's a really good guy. Really cares about Chelsea. And you know, I think the Chelsea Sports Trust have been quite complimentary about him as well, about the work that he's done with them. So. You know, if we can get him on one of them and maybe one of the ownership, be great, wouldn't it? But we'll see what happens. But that is a great idea, and I'm really excited about that. Great work, Cam. Do give him a follow. Great work by Louis as well, honestly, and all those boys. They do such a great job. They really deserve a lot of praise. And I'm being serious here. I'm not just blowing wind up his backside. I really mean it. It's give the Echo a follow, give Louis a follow, give Cam a follow, and give the Sideline a follow as well. Really, really good stuff. And of course, give me a follow, and I'll accept you because I'm private. But yeah, we've got more of these coming. We're playing Manchester United on Thursday. That's going to be fun. We'll probably outplay them for 90 minutes, and then they'll score with their first shot. Which will probably be offside and won't be a goal, but will be given anyway. Because I said this to people like this week: we could play the Chelsea's best game in the club's history, the best game we've ever played, and Man United would still get a fluky goal in the 90th minute and win. Like, because it's just, the luck they've had against us recently is just unbelievable. You know, we really need a win against them now. And I mean, it would be typical Chelsea, wouldn't it, to draw home to Burnley and then beat Man United at home. I mean, you know.
In the grand scheme of things. But can we get one more speaker in before we wrap up?
Yes, we can. Oh, we've got Mario. Mario's up. Yes.
Hello. How are you guys?
City Strolls. Welcome.
Good, good. First of all, I think OB made some really, really good points. The challenge we've got at Chelsea is that we are living in different times now. Yes, we could get Conte back. Yes, we could get Mourinho back. Yes, we could carry on changing our manager for every two and a half years. I understand all of those things. But we were changing our manager every 2.5 years when we had a backbone to the team. We had a level of experience. We basically had a team that was managing itself. So I just want to, in a very friendly way and a very positive way, say that I'm going to hold my nerve based on the conversation I had last time we spoke, which is I think we've got to stick with a coach. My biggest concern is one that I feel we have a total lack of control over, and that's what really frightens the bloody life out of me, which is the ownership. I think the ownership have left a train crash. I think the ownership have completely broken up a squad, spent money haphazardly without really understanding how they're spending money, what they're spending money on, and hoping that some of these youngsters will make it good, and they will. But unfortunately, that is going to take time. As much as we want to have a winning mentality, as much as we need to have that winning mentality, and we've all got it, and I've got it, which is why I feel gut-wrenched about the result today, as does Obi and everybody else. It's a different world we live in at the moment. It's not a world I'm particularly enjoying, and it's not a world I particularly agree with. But I think I'm going to keep my nervous state. We stick with Pochettino. In terms of communication, I think that is important. I think legacy that is started and legacy that is continued is really important. You know, at least we had an idea of what was going on strategically, because we had voices such as Marina, we had voices such as Bruce. But whether you agree with these people or not, they were voices. The way, and I don't even know the guy's name. There you go, that sums it up. And I've been supporting Chelsea for 52 years. I don't even know the guy who sent that really ridiculous, rude, heartless, uncaring, don't give a toss response back to the Chelsea Supporters Trust last week in reply to the letter that they sent. I think that was a totally inadequate response and shows how much the leadership care about the football club. We don't have any control over that unless we voice our concerns and support what's going on with the supporters. And I would urge us to support that as much as we possibly can. So, in summary, I'm going to keep my nerve, and we can all have an argument about that. And if Pochettino leaves in the summer, you can throw it back in my face. But I think we've got to keep our nerve. We cannot continue to keep changing managers, especially with such a young team. And we need to really get behind as the club as supporters and tell this ownership what we think of them. And all we want is a clear idea on where the club is going and what they intend to do with the club. Right now, I feel that they don't care about the club at all. And having the fans behind the team, yes, that is driven by performances. I totally agree. Obi, I think you're right. But I also feel, as a fan of long standing, I would be more behind the football team and the club as well if I felt we had a good ownership and an ownership that really had the heart of the club, you know, as a priority. And I don't think it does. And there are some very simple tweaks that the manager can make in terms of bringing experience in various positions, but he's not allowed to, because the strategy of the club is not to buy players over a certain age. And we have got players like Joe Cole, ex-players like Joe Cole, and various other ex-players. I think Frank sort of alluded to it, but didn't actually say it. He said we should bring a little bit of experience into the team to help the youngsters. Frank Leboeuf said it many, many times. And how many of the existing veterans, okay, have said Chelsea Football Club is a completely different club to what they're used to? And that's been driven by the new ownership. I really don't have any time for the new ownership. And in the same way that we were talking about Pochettino a couple of weeks back when we spoke last, and I sort of chipped in and said, look, let's stick with it. I feel the same way that a lot of people feel about Pochettino, but I feel that way about the ownership. I think they're appalling. And unfortunately, corporate Americans are like that. I've got a lot of experience of it. And that really concerns me. Over and out, I'm going to go and have an Italian dinner.
Enjoy your dinner.
Yes.
Good points there. I mean, I think I'm less sceptical of the ownership than you are, but I do get that. I mean, like, again, we can't... There's no way we can dispute what you said, because they haven't communicated with us. And
I was going to say, when you're saying you're less skeptical, I mean, this is the last thing I'll say before we wrap up with it. Yeah. When you say you're less skeptical about the American ownership, I don't understand how, because they've done nothing to prove to all of us, as you said, because I've not said anything, why we shouldn't be. And I think, look, I think a big thing with American ownership in football is, let's be honest, if you look at obviously the owners before FSG, even FSG in some cases, Stan Kroenke at Arsenal, you know, two big examples there of clubs which, you know, have had an ownership from America who didn't understand or appreciate the situation they had in some cases until it was too late. And I worry that that's a route we're going down, I feel. But what's worse is we're a combination of the pair. And obviously, you'd think, you know, when they came in, they put in their bid, they talked about certain things which they haven't filled over the last 18 months, especially with fan culture and fan understanding and fan conversations. Mm. And they've not really done anything to boost the image of American ownership within football, in my opinion. I think that is, I don't mean to make that sound like I think, you know, it's not casting a blanket over a situation. But, I mean, obviously, you look at proven track records, and the proven track record for US ownership in football is, if we're going to put it in no uncertain terms, pretty shit. So, you know, I think it's a case that it needs to be looked at.
Liverpool have done pretty well in the last 2 years. Liverpool and Arsenal are both in the top four.
Had football people put in no score. I mean, look, Klopp came into Liverpool and Michael Edwards came into Liverpool, and the FSG just went off the previous mess, went, right, you've got to fix it. You know what you're doing.
Yeah, it took them five years. Like, in the first 5 years of FSG, they got top four once and they won one trophy. They spent a lot of money badly. It took them finding the right manager and the right sporting director to get it right. Now, I'm not excusing anything that the owners have done. I'm not, you know, they've messed up. They've made some bad decisions. And they're giving the wrong impression. You know, I totally understand why people are sceptical. That's what I'm trying to say. Like, I get why people are sceptical. I guess the reason I'm less sceptical is because I know what they want to achieve and how they want to achieve it. But other people don't know that. Other people haven't heard that. Other people haven't been told that. Right, so I get being skeptical. This is why they need to communicate, because unless they communicate, people have a right to be skeptical. You know, they do, and because they care about the club, we all care about the club, and so of course we're going to be concerned when things are as they are right now. You know, and I think this, and I've talked to you about this. This under 25 rule is utterly ridiculous. And that comes from, you know, the sporting directors and the owners. And that's not, you know, it's not going to work. That can't work in football. You have to have some experienced players and good experience and leaders. And they've got to realise this. And that's one of their biggest mistakes, you know, is this kind of just determination that, yeah, we're going to stick with this young players policy, like, whatever happens. Because they're almost stubbornly sticking to it, and it, you know, we all know that's not what that has never worked in football. We have no good experience, and when you just have a bunch of kids playing together, you know, it takes ages for that team to mature and come to fruition. But you need leaders, you need experience, you need players who will deliver, you know, I have not been complimentary to the owners recently. I've had plenty of disagreements with Daniel Finkelstein in our conversations. But obviously, those are private conversations. But yeah, I think people are right to be sceptical, because they haven't communicated with us, and because they haven't given us evidence on the pitch of what they want to do. So I'm not disagreeing with you, Louis, at all. All with Mario as well. Like, I totally get why people are sceptical, and that's up to the club to allay those fears, and they haven't, and they need to. It's their job. I think they should be communicating, and, you know, I'm getting a bit sick and tired of them not communicating with us. I think it's getting a bit disrespectful, at this point.
I just wanted to say one thing, and that I think Mario pointed out really well. You know, he said he's seen the corporate American type. He knows how they are, and that's really a micro. That's exactly what we've seen so far with the owners, right? They've come in where we're wondering, oh, you know, there's aspects about our policy as a club from a sporting perspective that are entirely based in the financial and business reason why they bought us, right? Let's look at the transfer policy, for instance, 25 and under players. This is a multi, almost $1 trillion, you know, company or conglomerate who has purchased us, right? So they're going to have the deepest research, you know, tools, methods, and case studies that they're doing before they're making a purchase like this. Abramovich, under the Abramovich era, we made countless errors in not locking down players to contracts when we needed to in order to be able to sell them for a fair
absolutely.
Value.
Yeah.
We made countless errors in some cases, you know, holding too true to our 30 and over policy. And they're going to definitely have seen that and seen all the areas where we mismanaged the club, mismanaged fund opportunities. And obviously, you know, Chelsea got that better as we got deeper into the Abramovich and Marina era. But they will have looked at that and said, okay, well, we're a hedge fund, right? We want to buy this club. And yeah, ooh la la, we want to win all these things. The best way to raise the price of the club is to win. But at the end of the day, they want to sell the club in 10 to 20 years, and they want to make money back for their investors. That's really what it is, and that's the American mindset. And I'm speaking from experience as an American.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So I agree with you. Yeah, I mean, you're right.
They want players under 25 because they know that they're going to have a resale value. They know that if they lock them to a certain contract and they turn out to be good enough, they're going to end up able to sell those players and still make a profit on top of, you know, all the money those players are going to make them while they're in a Chelsea shirt. So there's a lot of corporate American kind of signals that we're getting. Mario is right. And that we do not want to be, you're right to say that FSG has figured it out to some extent. And it did take time, but we would rather be an FSG, even though I know that our owners were looking for them as a model, than be the Glazers who came in and just absolutely ruined, you know, Man United from a, you know, financial perspective by buying the club with debt and saddling it onto the club and, you know, taking out profits. We're obviously not in that territory, and we could have been in that territory with some of the other ownership groups that were trying to buy us that were American as well.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
We still have a lot of these problems, and that's something that we really got to stay focused on as a fan base. I think this is different. You need a hybrid model, corporate American, you know, ideals mixed with entertainment style American sports ideas just don't gel in the UK, and it's never going to. And a hybrid model is needed. And then that's just all I have to say.
Yeah, no,
I don't want a fucking swimming pool for £700,000 a week watching my football team. Let's be that way. Let's not be a Fulham. Let's not be the Cairns. Let's not be the Glazers. Let's not. I mean, the list goes on. Like, it's nuts, isn't it? It's absolutely insane.
Yeah, I mean, I mean, you're right. I mean, to Cam's point, I said this from the start. Chelsea, I mean, like, let's be like, I'll be, one of the things that I think is really, really important to note is that Chelsea didn't make enough money for what we should have made in terms of profit under Abramovich. Because basically, when you look at the figures, that it tells you this. Basically, what used to happen is that we used to basically get a check from Roman Abramovich to cover any losses that were beyond, you know, the Premier League rules. Like, I mean, I've checked the 2020 figures. Roman Abramovich put in 250 million that year, and if he hadn't, Chelsea would have made losses of over 300 million, which would have got us in big trouble with FFP and PSR and all of that. We'd have got in huge trouble. Now, whoever bought Chelsea, whoever it was, Chelsea need to become a profitable football club. We need to get bigger commercial deals. We need to be more efficient in the transfer market. We needed to lower the wage bill. And the owners have lowered the wage bill. The wage bill is now only, I think it's 150 million or potentially even less than that now. And it was nearly 300 million when they bought the club. And that's a good idea. And I like that. But yeah, the way they get Chelsea, the way they make the most money out of Chelsea is Chelsea being in the Champions League every season by winning, competing for trophies, by getting the, and that gives you the bigger commercial deals. That gives you the bigger prize money. It gives you Champions League money. It gives you, so your revenue goes up. They want to get revenue to 1 billion And you can't do that by being a mid-table team, right? You have to be playing Champions League football every season. You have to be competing for trophies. You have to be doing all of that in the men's and women's team to make that kind of revenue, right?
Also, you don't earn money in football. It's making a profit in football at the elite level is extremely difficult. And when I say extremely difficult, it's nigh on impossible.
We can make more money than we're making at the moment, but if
they're hedge fund managers, you don't make profits by doing that sort of stuff. You physically cannot make a profit.
The value of the club, right? The more successful Chelsea are, the more value their investment in Chelsea is, right? So they can sell off a part of their controlling interest for the same amount they bought the whole interest for, so they've made a profit. That's the point. Like, when the more successful you are, the more revenue you make, the more the high profile of the club, then the more value their initial investment has, and the more they can sell Chelsea for. Like, they're not going to be able to make any profit selling Chelsea if we're 11th in the Premier League, you know, every season. That's just not going to happen. So, but yeah, I know. I get why people are. I get the skepticism. I do. I mean, I ideally wouldn't be like I prefer not to be owned by someone like Clear Lake, but here we are. You know, I'd rather them than the Ricketts, that's for sure. But I know there's a lot of frustration. There's a lot of frustration, and fans are entitled to it. We've got CFC Central here, top man. So again, let's go back to the game for a bit. But actually, CFC Central, what are your thoughts on the game?
Hey everyone, kind of in the middle of a migraine, to be honest, still processing it. I don't think I will sort of have a solid opinion until I watch the game back. But I mean, what can you say? 2 goals conceded against 10 men, 2 goals conceded for 5 games in a row. You create 3xG, and your only goal is, you know, from a penalty, and the other one was thanks to Cole Palmer. So I do understand that there is a lot of frustration with the manager, but again, this is exactly where a lot of us envisioned the club would be at this point in time. It just hurts because it's a topsy-turvy kind of season. Last season, we just became numb to our misfortunes. I think at one point in time, we were genuinely at 17th, 18th level relegation form. And this season, there have been highs and there have been horrible, horrible lows. So I think this continues for a bit. I still don't know what the plan is for the summer. And as we approach closer, we're only like 10 games now, provided we reach the final of the FA Cup. But other than that, that's about all the time that we have to figure out new manager, any new signings that have to be made. And it's tough. Like, I personally speaking, even from a completely unbiased neutral perspective, there have to be some big calls. So it is extremely confusing. I don't envy anybody who's a decision maker at the club. But yeah, I mean, I do think we have a good base to build. And hopefully we'll be able to nurture those 5-6 players and sculpt the rest into place as and when the years roll on.
Thank you, Central. That's really good. I think that's a good way to finish. Central's always got smart views. I always respect his views. Really summed up really well there, I think. I want to thank everyone for their contributions. Louis, Cam, everyone else who spoke today. Really appreciate your views. I think we all care about Chelsea. We all want what's best for Chelsea. We all have different perspectives on that, and that's why we have healthy debate, and that's why debate is important, because every fan's views matter and every fan's views needs to be acknowledged. Honestly, obviously, as always, in a respectful way, in a dignified way. But certainly, I think it's really important that the owners listen to the fans and start taking notice of the fans, because fans' views are important and fans' concerns are legitimate and they need to be listened to. So I think, and they need to be addressed. So okay, all we can do is look forward to the next game on Thursday. Obviously, there's the town hall event on Monday. Make sure you're there and give all those accounts a follow. That's going to be fantastic.
7:30 on Monday.
For Chelsea sideline.
So, 7:30 on Monday, just for the Chelsea town hall. Chelsea sideline club's hosting. Hope CFC Central is going to be there, but make sure you're there as well, everyone.
Fantastic. Fantastic. It's going to be good. It's going to be good. And then we've got the game on Thursday, and there'll be another final score with the score after that game, as ever. I don't have much hope for that game, honestly. But, we keep going with Chelsea fans. We keep backing our team. So thanks, everyone, for being part of this. Really appreciate it. And up the Chelsea.